ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on today's political and economic issues. Dave, it's Monday, July 22nd, 2000. What year is this? 19.
I'm afraid so. It's waning as we speak. Hello.
I'll tell you what. We talk so much about 2020. Feels like we're already in 2020, and I guess you could say that's kind of like time travel.
Well, yeah, and perhaps too, it's because our vision tends to be 2020.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to all things gold and silver.
Absolutely. But yeah, it is kind of like living in the future when, you know, you're discussing things in 2020 and so forth. Yeah, well, okay. All right, enough of that, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, the heat has gotten to Melody. We're looking for a break today on the Eastern Shore. Major thunderstorms this evening. I guess you're having them now. But a nice relief. It was miserable, but I would think I'll take it any day over January. So.
Indeed.
So when it's 0 degrees, we'll have to remember this week and have it warm us up. Anyway, let's go ahead and see if gold was hot today also. And not by too much, but there was some pressure on it just here in, you know, late day trading when everything is settling through and so forth. So gold is holding 1425. We had a high of 1429. Silver was up 20 cents today at 1648. Platinum was up 3 at 852. Palladium was up 22 at 1535. 10-year yield. I'm not there yet. USDX today is 0.15 to the upside at 97.28. Crude oil was up 46 cents at 56.09. Print is small, ladies and gentlemen. And the paper markets today, you know, they kind of had a struggling day all day, but the Dow was up 18 points. 27,172, NASDAQ up 57 at 8204, S&P up 8 at 2985, and of course, you know, all eyes are on the Fed, so it's really kind of silly. I mean, all this buildup to the Fed, like it really is going to mean something. Like, it's really going to make a difference whether he goes, well, I guess it will to some degree, but it gives them a little more time if they cut rates. So, you know, all this anticipation, stocks are climbing as rate cut moves closer. I don't know if I can handle it, Dave.
Another day, another drama, Melody.
Oh, my gosh. 10-year yield today was down 0.01 at 2.04%.
Still note that yield inversion, 2-5 and 10-year, compared to the 3-month, still signaling the imminent, we'll call it, recession.
Still hanging in there, isn't it?
It is.
And let's see if there's any other exciting news that happened today. Foreign markets, Hong Kong was down, you know, almost a little over 1.33%, 388 points. They had some more nasty demonstrations over the weekend. Bitcoin is hanging in there, down 4% today, but still holding a 10,000 level for nothing. It just cracks me up. Nothing. Do you know anybody who's taken profit from their Bitcoins or their cryptos? Do you know anyone that has taken profit?
I have.
Well, good.
Not me personally, but I a friend of mine did it as a speculative move, and he had good timing. Let's just say he bought in when it was fairly low. He sold at some point last year before the drop. I don't know if I even talked to him recently, but I don't know if he got back in again. He got out and said he won't be back in.
But let me make a point, and you know, but he's the real wealthy guy, right? the multiple millions of dollars person.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple millions.
Yeah.
But he did it right. He got in and he got out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know how he protects his wealth. And that's what investors should do. You just don't ride it forever. So what if you miss the high? Rarely do people ever get the high. And it's just like now we see all these stocks and everything that, you know, people are feeling really good, confident, sassy and everything. It's like, that's when you get out. You sell so you can go back in. You protect what you have. So when they come back down, you can make another wise investment. But as human nature, as human beings, we don't do that. We usually sell low, buy high.
We're wishful thinkers.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, you know, we were talking about interest rate cuts, that inversion, and, you know, here's another one of these firms. I guess Morgan Stanley comes out and says in a lengthy analysis that it spells out the likelihood of negative growth within the next 12 months. You know, and again, they're looking at the trade tensions that could lead to layoffs. Pullback from consumers are also at the center of the recession case. If trade tensions escalate further or economists see the direct impact of tariffs interacting with the indirect effects of tighter financial conditions and other spillovers potentially leading consumers to retrench. Basically, what they're doing is it's called CYA.
Yeah, yes.
That's what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just blame the administration and everything else. And, you know, it's all because of the tariffs. No, they're just covering their tushes. They're covering their tushes. But, so it's kind of, you know, corporates may start laying off workers, cutting CapEx as margins are hit further and uncertainty rises. So she's certainly labeling very uncertain times for the future, Dave. You know, very, you know, severe, not just a light recession, but a pretty severe one that they're suggesting.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. I mean, the effects, according to their economists, would be a large demand shock. That would take growth from, you know, projected 2.2% this year to a negative 0.1% in 2020. It's a substantial reversal for an economy that grew 2.9% last year. And from an investment standpoint, you know, it could be would be a significant hit to equities, the paper markets. You know, the best bets supposedly being defensive sectors like healthcare and consumer staples, with autos and tech hardware, the areas most likely to underperform again in the paper market. Now, their chief economist, Zentner, since recessions don't announce themselves when they arrive and markets are forward-looking, history suggests that investors should not wait for confirmation of a recession before getting more defensive in their asset allocation. We'll just call her Captain Obvious Zentner. ladies and gentlemen, patience doesn't pay when it comes to recessions, impending, imminent, or, you know, in the midst of. An investor who rotates out of paper only after a recession is confirmed is too late. Would have, you know, they felt the worst of equity underperformance and missed out on substantial positive returns on other options, namely gold and silver.
Well, you know, I guess this trade deal is on again. I was reading headlines today, they're kissing and making up again today. But it's interesting about how China has reached parity on the global 500.
How about it? You know, the 2019 Fortune Global 500 signifies what it characterizes as the profound rivalries reshaping business today. You know, as the Chinese century nears its third decade, Fortune magazine's Global 500 shows how profoundly the world's balance of power could be and probably is shifting right before our very eyes. American companies account for 121 of the world's largest corporations by revenue. Chinese companies account for, listen to this, 129.
Wow.
Including 10 Taiwanese companies. For the first time since the debut of the Global 500 in 1990, gosh, it's almost 30 years ago, and arguably for the first time since World War II, a nation other than the U.S. is at the top of the ranks of global big business. Now, that shift's transforming not just the business world, but the world as a whole. As China seeks to succeed the U.S. as the preeminent superpower, ain't there yet. Business is playing an even larger role in international affairs than usual.
And you know what? This is just is exactly what President Trump is trying to fight. And it's a matter of bringing it to the attention. I don't know what what exactly has been done in order to fight this. I mean, certainly the trade agreements and so forth and whatnot. But I mean, for 30 years, we have seen changes. We've been talking about these changes for 25 years. And as we continue to see the shift in business, and so this is, this is what, President Trump, this is what I think he's trying to fight to bring the United States back into the limelight. But I'm not sure I'm not sure it's happening, but I think that's what he has meant to do. But we have these nations that have always competed economically, but the U.S. and China are engaged in this direct battle over the world's economic life force, and that is technology. Former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson wrote about that the battle is about whose economy will drive the technology of the future and set the standards for it. And this battle is just not metaphorical. It involves life and death issues of national security, and that's why the U.S. has partially banned American companies from buying products made by telecom equipment giant Huawei. But I was just hearing today, Dave, that we're looking to give up concessions on Huawei to further this trade agreement. So, I mean, that is China's bargaining chip, I think. I mean, I don't know. So, I don't know just how strong we're going to be on that issue with Huawei, since the company is state-directed and could sabotage the 5G infrastructure, use it to steal data. And, we can argue the point of 5G, but that's not the point of this article here. You know, China has set explicit goals of dominating such fields as artificial intelligence, quantum computing, robotics, autonomous vehicles.
Well, it's fascinating because as these fights escalate, other nations, some allies of ours, some allies of China, some neither, other nations, may feel they have to commit one way or another to either Chinese or U.S. technology. And that certainly will raise the stakes even higher than they are today. It's true that Chinese companies' revenues account for only a little over 25% of the global 500 total, and that's well behind America's roughly 29%. But that's to be expected. China's the rising power, economically smaller, but growing much faster. Number one nationally, the number one nationality among the top 50 companies in this year's Global 500 is American. Among the bottom 50, it's Chinese. These companies near the bottom are rising quickly, and like their country, they're burning with ambition. Xi Jinping has said that by 2049, the Communist Revolution centennial, that China will be fully developed, rich, and powerful. Now, that's a goal that China expert Graham Allison of Harvard University says includes being unambiguously number one with the military that can take on and defeat all adversaries. Interesting times, Melody. Interesting future.
Absolutely. I'm glad we're in the retirement bracket of that.
Oh, my gosh.
But, we were talking about tariffs, so I'm going to stay on that mindset. you know, because, you know, we have these earnings that are coming out. And again, they're all going to be blaming the tariffs that I'm not sure, you know, I don't know how we can, you know, divide the line onto whether it is truly the tariffs or it's just the economy overall. Or is it both? You know, so again, you're having these earnings. It's a big week for technology earnings. And, you know, analysts are betting that the trade war blame game is going to intensify. We have the S&P 500 companies began reporting second quarter earnings. More than a third of them have cited tariffs. Yeah, they're not going to say bad business. They have to blame something. Right, Dave? You know, they're not going to,
There are reasons, there are causes and effects for most of these things. And, I mean, you can quantify that the tariffs are a big reason for this. Again, like you said, it's not the only reason, but clearly, I believe they're a big reason for this downturn. We have to wait and see, you know, what the longer term impact is, particularly if there's going to be an agreement. And then it, perhaps a year from now, you know, the world will be debating, perhaps we will on this program, you know, that, hey, perhaps all this short term, whatever you want to call it, pressure, harm even, was worth it. Anyway.
Well, you know, I guess sometimes that the, you know, when you have the 800-pound gorilla in the room and the easiest target out there is trade uncertainty, you could think of a number of sectors where companies whose earnings are not great, at least on year-over-year comparison basis, are going to use that as a scapegoat. My question is just how low does the economies have to go, you know, before they push, go into higher gear on these trade agreements?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Heading into an election year is not the perfect timing.
Well, that's I was just going to say there are two big factors that I think could drive that. Number one, if we start to see growth go negative or get down, you know, below 1%, 0.5% growth, coupled with the 2020 election, I think that's going to light a fire. But by then, it will probably be too late. We will see.
Well, it's not too late to be heading into our breaks. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We got two more segments to go. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, which will probably be going out a little bit late this week. I should make that announcement. I know you're sit there waiting for it, but I am running a little late today and getting that out. And Dave, you were early.
Hey, you know,
I was late.
You know, it's the law of averages, Melody. The good news is it gets published, gosh darn it.
So, you know, but sign up for it, ladies and gentlemen. dgscoins.com. go to the mailbox, go to that page and sign up for it. And of course, the radio show, you can listen every day live. Just go to the bar, not the kind of bar that you go into and drink and listen to well, you could do that too if you want to listen to the program in your headsets from the phone. But go to the website, radio page, at the very top is a gray bar, and you can go in there and hit that. You can listen live or go to the archives if you can't be here at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But thank you, and I do appreciate your support. And I don't know, Dave, this is it's just the stuff that we talk about on a day in, day out, and it's important, but then when I look at it, it's like meaningless. And I shouldn't say that when I'm doing the radio program, but the debt ceiling, it's so very important. But we just know what they're going to do. We know how they're going to do it, and it's just frustrating because they don't care. They literally don't care. So we have them. Supposedly Congress and the White House is on the brink of debt ceiling agreement. Yay.
Hey, yippee-yay. You know, and it shows why the debt ceiling per se should be eliminated. I think it's a waste of Congress's time. It's a waste of the American people's time. We need to elect people to Congress who are going to do their job and enact budgets and spending and tax bills that are going to balance the stinking budget and stop this game playing with American psyches.
It's American's, you know, money.
That put investors on edge.
You know,
3 months, 6 months, a year, absolutely. But, you know, having said that, Congress and the White House reportedly on the brink of an agreement that would suspend the debt limit until July 31, 2021.
Gee, after
and increase government spending for 2 years. Yeah, I find it interesting that it was in the middle of the fiscal year, and they didn't tie it to the end of the year. That was, probably someone's demand. But the deal that's in the final stages of negotiation, as we're hearing from both White House and congressional spokespeople, would offset about $75 billion of higher spending levels in the agreement, giving the administration and Republicans about half the savings they sought. The question remains whether the president will support it. Donald Trump told reporters earlier today that his administration's having very good talks with congressional Democrats, but time is running short for the House to vote in a package which is being negotiated by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who rejected a White House offer late last week, and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. House members are scheduled to begin a 6-week recess that begins this Friday.
I could probably argue that the debt ceiling if we went back on the gold standard, we wouldn't even need a debt ceiling. But you're right. This is the only time they work. You're right. What are they? You know what? They're supposed to. This frustrates me, and I don't mean to get off this because we're going to come back to this. But I don't know if we're going to talk about it later on in this program or not. So Mueller heads to Washington. You know, the Democrats, well, they got to, you know, ask him questions and so forth. You know, they're actually having mock interviews prior to this testimony on Wednesday. The Democrats are having, just to, so they know how to ask the right questions. And you know what I thought? You talk about a waste of time. That's a waste of time. Half of these politicians are experienced politicians. You'd think that they would know how to ask a proper question. I mean, it's, to me, I just thought it was absurd. What a waste. You talk about waste of money, waste of time. What else? What? I understand for, mock juries, but come on.
For their 5 minutes of questioning in the limelight, I think they'd be, I mean, given the reality, disgusting, and given that, you know, the political reality, what they should have done, and presumably still have time to do, is, you know, however many people are on the House committees, just have, particularly the younger ones, the least senior ones, submit their questions. There should just be 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 at the most people questioning. Why can't the leaders just question, or even their counsel? And, you know, you'd have, I think there'd be better decorum. There'd be so much less grandstanding.
It's all theatrics. It's all it is. If these people would just ask the stupid questions instead of making threats, accusing, and everything else, how hard is it to ask a question? You should be able to get in quite a few questions in 5 minutes. But they all rather hear themselves talk and confuse, and it's, anyway. And I heard when they were having these mock sessions, I just thought, typical. Anyway, let's get back to the debt ceiling, Dave. But I agree. I thought it was kind of bizarre. But anyway, back to the spending increase that Pelosi and Mnuchin, they've tentatively agreed, like you mentioned. And, of course, they would raise the current budget caps by $320 billion over the 2 years. And the increase is $30 billion less than the Democrats sought. If split evenly over 2 years, that would equal about $17 billion increase for defense and $17 billion increase for domestic programs in 2020 and over the 2019 levels, giving Democrats the parity they sought for increases in both categories. Trump officials sought to partially offset those increases with savings from entitlement programs like Medicare and Medicaid that are not subject to annual budget caps. With savings. How's that work, Dave?
Well, you know, it depends. There can be real savings, or there can be, you know, paper savings, bogus savings, you know, making the assumptions, you know, more generous to, you know, create a level in this case of savings that you want. I mean, real savings would be achieved by either providing less money to the states for Medicaid, reducing reimbursement rates to hospitals and doctors. That's already known to be a big problem across the country, particularly in rural areas. So I don't know. I haven't seen the details. But, you know, these caps on Medicare spending, I mean, essentially force the government to lower reimbursement rates more often and more steeply than they probably otherwise would. Now, you know, while the budget deal doesn't have to be included, you know, with language to raise the debt limit, lawmakers wanted it to be addressed soon so, you know, Congress can pass the appropriation bills before the new fiscal year begins on October 1st. It's been a while since they've passed all 12 or 13 appropriation bills. They last year's first time in a long time they did as many as they did, but you know, if they didn't get this done, they'd have to pass a stopgap spending measure to prevent a government shutdown. And if Congress doesn't lift the budget caps, you know, that limit government outlays, current law would trigger automatic cuts at the end of the calendar year. Now, interestingly, the Nonpartisan Budget Watchdog Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says the spending increases in this tentative agreement would likely add $2 trillion to the long-term debt when interest costs are factored in. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Your tax dollars at work.
Wow. We want to get to about interest rates, but since we still got a few minutes, did you want to continue with that, or should we go ahead and there's a couple of things I want to talk. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this. The since it's all on the same page, so to speak. Today's article, you wrote about how the central banks all over the world are cutting interest rates. They all need the stimulus in order to keep their economies going, and many of these are negative rates. Can you tell us a little bit about what you wrote?
Because yeah,
it's very interesting.
Yeah, let me summarize the article a little more detailed than what we'll talk about here in the next few minutes. Again, that'll be out sometime after today's program. But, you know, there's so much uncertainty and volatility swirling all around the world these days that, you know, we can't be surprised when the coming storms envelop the planet in one thick cloud of dust. You know, you think it's hard to see through the forest through or for the trees now? Well, just wait. The economies of nations around the world continue to weaken amid the U.S.-China trade war, internal struggles related to, you know, our and their, you know, fiat currencies, and countless other geopolitical tensions. You know, as inflation continues to fall short of many policymakers' targets, ironic their reason for being for most of them, you know, many central bankers are on the verge of sending rates downhill once again. Indeed, the vast majority of, in fact, virtually all analysts believe the Fed, for one, will make its first cut to the Fed funds rate in, you know, in a decade at its meeting later this month. And outgoing European Central Bank President Mario Draghi has signaled similar action, although many believe he'll wait until September. More on that later in the program. People's Bank of China has eased lending conditions, but so far has held fire on rates. But Russia, India, Australia, and New Zealand are among those who've already injected fresh stimulus into their economies. Now, some analysts at Bloomberg News, mainstream, I know, but I believe their analysis here is instructive, good information providers, if not perspectives. But they see the ever-independent, inscrutable Bank of Japan coming under pressure to join in the fun. Japan, of course, already enjoys negative rates, as does the European Central Bank and others. Now, all of this loosening is a big reversal from the end of 2018, when investors were bracing for tighter monetary policy all over the place.
Well, who led that charge? I think we know.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, our good old Fed has been leading by example, or trying to do so. Thanks. The Fed increased rates 4 times last year alone, a total of 9 times since December 2015, when they started at virtually 0%. Now, economist Tom Orlick of Bloomberg observed that, you know, major central banks face different pressures. For the Fed, where economic fundamentals appear on paper to be robust, it's the fear of what's to come that's prompting action. He added that in Europe, lower than expected growth demands a response, but space to provide it is limited. And in China, an economy stymied by tariffs requires cuts as high leverage counsels caution. Those are his words.
You know, Dave, it's just amazing because all these economies, you know, ours and too, everything is so great. The world's, you know, blah, 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 blah. And yet here's the central banks. They're doing everything possible just to keep it going as is. And it's just a matter of time until they all run out of steam. And, you know, they're all running out of things. You know, that's why the additional pressure to keep lowering these rates. So what is, and I, that's...
Debt. And more debt.
And that's their agenda. So tell us about their agenda.
Well, the crux of this is, you know, recently Bloomberg Economics released its quarterly review of about two dozen of the top central banks across the earth. You know, together they set policy for 90% of global GDP. So we're, you know, the article summarizes about little close to a dozen. I'm just going to do half of that. Here, you know, first the Federal Reserve, obviously, you know, with current Fed funds rate at 2.5% at the upper range, but with the forecast by Bloomberg anyway of 2% by the end of the year. You know, we know that Jerome Powell's assured Americans that the Fed's committed to keeping the economy on track and that they will act as appropriate to do just that. And as I mentioned, Bloomberg economists expect 50 basis points of cuts the rest of this year, 25 in July, another 25 in December, depending on what the incoming data say.
Which two central banks would you like to, you know, tell us a little bit about? I think the two most, you know, maybe the two most important.
Well, let's talk about the Bank of England and the Bank of China. The Bank of England, you know, their governor, Mark Carney, he's noted the darkening outlook over the UK since global trade tensions flared up. The extension of Brexit's deadline through October has also prolonged the uncertainty there that's holding back British companies' investments. And that's led to, you know, a widening gap between the bank's forecasts for gradual rate hikes that assume a smooth Brexit and the market's view that rate cuts are next on the agenda. You know, also complicating the factor, Carney's on his way out. Someone will take over next February, but, you know, that's going to depend on what happens with the selection of a new prime minister. And if the departure from the EU goes badly in October, well, Carney and the Bank of England certainly going to have his hands full until he leaves. And then the People's Bank of China, just real quickly, markets are raising their bets that the PBOC is going to need to take bigger easing steps to revive their downturn in growth there this year.
Well, if their one-year best lending rate is 4.35%, they have a whole lot more room to lower than anybody else, don't they?
Well, yeah, other things being equal, that's true.
And being equal, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. Heading into the break, we were talking about the central banks and, of course, their abilities to lower rates all the way into negative territory just to keep their little economies going. That should make everybody feel all warm and fuzzy inside, Dave.
Hey.
You know, hey, this is real good, strong. Doesn't anybody get it? But something interesting came up. You have Iran. They warn that they're going to execute 17 people as spies. So Iran is locked in a worsening political standoff with Western powers. They handed down the death sentences to several nationals accused of being part of a CIA-trained spy network that was actually uncovered earlier this year. Now, our president has denounced this report as totally false. And beyond that, an administration official said the White House is not going to comment on intelligence activities. A senior intelligence officer in Tehran told foreign media that 17 people had been arrested. None of the suspects are dual nationals, according to this official, who declined to be identified and didn't say how many were sentenced to death. Now, this is what I question, Dave, is because usually there's... You know, if you don't want to give your name and you're not identified, it kind of takes a little bit of credibility out of your announcement that you have 17 people that you're going to execute as spies.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, on the other hand, you know, if you're an Iranian official or an intelligence official that's close to the Iranian government or Revolutionary Guard, you don't want to be quoted.
But that's another point, though. They wouldn't be talking to the media.
Maybe not. It depends on where they're coming from. Who knows if it's true or not? We're not passing judgment on its veracity, and I'm not sure. It's interesting. I'm not sure if the president's denunciation of the report as being false is the overall situation, or just their statement accusing these 17 people as being part of this CIA network. They supposedly uncovered earlier, this year. So I couldn't get clarification on that. So we're stuck with what we read at this point.
So is there anything which is true? Because you're right. Why would they announce something like this? Particularly just like the tit for tat thing with the oil cargo ship with Britain,
right?
You know it's that tit for tat kind of thing, and so it is kind of interesting. Is there anything else in there that you'd like to share with us?
No, not particularly. I mean, Pompeo, said that, talked about Iran's long history of lying. Again, we're not sure that he's talking about, the entire story or just the part about these people having been trained by the CIA. But here's a case where I suspect that this story is going to go away very quickly. and that would give you, should give us some good reason to pause, and especially with respect to this story's credibility, as you began to suggest.
Puerto Rico governor says he's not going to seek re-election. He says he's not going to resign amid calls that he left office after embarrassing online chats with other officials. That was all leaked, and charges of corruption in his administration spreads. He says he made mistakes. He apologizes. And to every Puerto Rican man and woman, he has heard you, and I hear you today. He said he's 40 years old. He's a Democrat whose administration has struggled to navigate the aftermath of the Hurricane Maria back in 2017. So I guess he drew a lot of anger earlier this month, Dave, when his private chats and other officials were with other officials were leaked to the media. I'm not sure what he said in those chats, but
Chatgate is what the scandal is being called. Involves apparently hundreds of pages of conversations and messages between Rosello and other people in his administration. You know, the men apparently insulted women, people with disabilities, and well, as victims of the hurricane. You know, one chat, he allegedly called the former speaker of the New York City Council the Spanish word for prostitute. In another, he accused San Juan's mayor, Carmen Yulin Cruz, of being off her meds when she announced her intent to run against him for governor next year. And he blames long working hours for his hurtful comments, and apologized to those he had offended, of course, after his private chats were leaked.
It is amazing that Rosella's, his education, he's a graduate from MIT.
I know.
He has a degree in biomedical engineering and economics. And, it just goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen. You know, there's a lot of discussion about Deutsche Bank. And everybody is viewing Deutsche Bank as possibly the next Lehman Brothers. We've talked about that numerous times on this program with you and me and on the other shows also. And Michael Snyder came up with his late edition of The Economic Collapse. Could it be possible that we're on the verge of the next Lehman Brothers moment? So the most important bank in all of Europe, Deutsche Bank, has $49 trillion in exposure to derivatives.
That's a lot of money.
You think? I don't know. People, it's just digits anymore. It's just digits. It's promises. $49 trillion worth of promises. But what's scary about that is most of the largest too-big-to-fail banks in the United States also have deep financial connections to this bank. Even though the bank has been hit by scandal after scandal, somehow it's been able to survive. Well, at least until now. But after what we've witnessed in recent weeks, more and more observers believe that the end is near for this Deutsche Bank. Now, we know on July 7th, they really shook up some investors over the globe. And we know it takes a lot to rattle Wall Street, but Deutsche Bank has managed to do so, Dave.
Well, they have. The German behemoth announced it's laying off 18,000 employees. That's one-fifth of its global workforce. And it's also pursuing a vast restructuring plan that includes shutting down its entire global equities trading business. Now, though Deutsche's Bloody Sunday in early July seemed to come out of the blue, it's actually the culmination of a years-long, some would say even decades-long, descent into unprofitability and scandal for the bank. And as Deutsche Bank collapses, it could take a whole lot of others down with it at the same time. Now, that derivatives book of $49 trillion notational puts Deutsche Bank in the same league as the holding companies of U.S. juggernauts, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs, who respectively logged in at $48, $47, and $42 trillion in derivatives at the end of 2018. So I guess you could say Deutsche Bank is in good company. Not necessarily the other way around. They deserve each other, Melody.
Oh, they certainly do. I mean, these are just, you know, total let up, ladies and gentlemen. And it's just like one little sneeze, one little blurb. And again, 2008 is going to be like a walk in the park. But, you know, the actual credit risk to Deutsche Bank is much, much lower than the notional value of its derivatives contracts. But we're still talking about an obscene amount of exposure. That's especially true when we consider the bank's balance sheet. At the end of 2018, they had assets of $1.5 trillion and liabilities of $1.4 trillion. So, you know, that equates to just over $70 billion equity. But things have deteriorated, and rapidly, since that time. $1 billion a day is reportedly being pulled out of the bank as we speak. Now, most don't care if the Deutsche Bank lives or dies. However, the failure of Deutsche Bank could quickly become a major crisis for the entire global financial system. And why? Because Deutsche Bank has traded these derivatives, of course, with the other financial terms of firms. And, of course, most of them and many of them are in U.S. territory. Lehman Brothers' problems a decade ago just became other banks' problems. Will Deutsche Bank pose the same dilemma? So we need to pay close attention to this, and I know Greg Hunter does a lot of discussions on Deutsche Bank. We do too here also. So it is something. Is this the first domino that's going to fall, and why are they going to allow it to fall? You know, that's the key, because they do know that it is the first domino, and they do know what can happen, that the whole global financial system is at stake when you're talking about so many trillions of dollars in the derivatives that are just promises to pay backed by nothing. Backed by, I'm not even sure they do a handshake on these deals.
No, they're tied to, most of them are tied to our good friend LIBOR.
Yeah, we know how well that is, and we know that's going to be redone in, 2021? 2021? Yeah. So LIBOR is going to be non-existent. So, and again, this all ties together, ladies and gentlemen. And I heard Deutsche Bank was creating, they did exactly what Bank of America did after 2008. They created different departments, so they try to move the derivatives into there so that they can protect the I don't know what you want to call it. They want to protect the core of the bank, offload these derivatives to another entity, a subsidiary or whatever, and let the taxpayers take care of it. So the bank gets protected, their shareholders get protected, and blah, blah, blah. It's the same old story again and again and again. But
same old song and dance.
Same old song and dance. You know, you're right about one thing. Friday we talked about minimum wage. It was a nice discussion on Friday, and you're right, Dave. Minimum wage is popular with the public. Why? Well, of course, and that's why politicians use it for re-election, because it is popular with the public, right?
Well, it is. Yet, the minimum wage's apparent popularity, according to some, might be fool's gold. Let's call it political pyrite. A newly published Business Insider survey found that support for the minimum wage literally falls apart when Americans of both major parties are told of its full economic impact. Now, in this particular survey of the 1,100 poll respondents, 63%, almost two-thirds, support raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Just 22% opposed the policy. But when told of the Congressional Budget Office's recent finding that raising the minimum wage to $15 would cost an estimated 1.3 million jobs, respondents soured on the policy.
Well, sure, after being told that a proposed policy to raise the minimum wage could lead to that many job losses, of course people aren't going to agree with it. Those 1.3 million job losses shouldn't pay. I mean, because those families that are paying for their, you know, supporting their families, so they shouldn't lose to help other people get higher wages. And the CBO, which projected that job losses could be as high as 3.7 million. And that explained in the report who would be most affected by the minimum wage. And then they break that down as far as how many, you know, they'd be teenagers. They, again, minimum wage is a, you know, an entry-level position. So it does affect the, you know, teenagers and, you know, part-time student workers and so forth and whatnot. You're not supposed to have a living wage, you know, when we talk about minimum wage or a lifetime. You're not supposed to be doing these types of positions for the rest of your life. You're supposed to better yourself. But anyway, but for better or worse, or with more states and cities adopting such policy, it appears we're soon going to have an abundance of new empirical evidence about raising the minimum wage, Dave.
Yeah, and, you know, talking further about money, we'll put this one in quotes. The Fed, is raising additional concerns about cryptocurrencies. Well, Fed policymakers, well, one of them, has gotten one thing right recently. On Friday, St. Louis Fed Prez James Bullard raised concerns about the rise of cryptocurrencies. He says it's bad news. We couldn't disagree with him more.
Gold and silver, ladies and gentlemen, if you want real money, give us a call at 1-800-375-418. Thank you, Dave.
Welcome. Thank you.
And you'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow with Butch Paul, myself, Pastor Butch Paul. Be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.